where we're up to, and perhaps tonight we will try our best to wrap up the Malacha of Zoreya, because time to move on. So just to recap where we're up to, and then tonight we'll get into a new issue of Zoreya. We began by discussing that the Lamentes Avos Malachas are patterned off the Malachas HaMishkan. And the reason why they are counted, they are enumerated in the way they are, is because it's based on Sidur Depas, on the way one would bake bread, one would prepare a loaf of bread from start to finish. So that's where we have Choresh, Zoreya, Kotzer Ma'amer, then it goes all the way to Ofeh, and to baking and cooking, that is all subsumed under the Sidur Depas. Malacha Zoreya, we discussed a couple of weeks ago, is even Bekol Shehu. We spoke a lot about the din of Chatzi Shir and whether Chatzi Shir applies to certain malachos. When it comes to Zoreya, we assume Zoreya is even Bekol Shehu. Zoreya has no minimum shir, and we assume even if you take the tiniest seed and put it into the ground, that is already considered a violation of Zoreya. We then discussed the issue of Avos and Toldos, that Zoreya is one of those malachas where we find an Av and a Tolda. So the Av would generally be the real malacha is if a person takes a seed, puts it in the ground, that's real planting. A tolda, a outgrowth of that malacha would be mashke mayim lezraim. For example, I have something that's already planted into the ground, and now I enhance the planting process by pouring water on it, by doing something that's going to help it develop and grow a little bit better, a little bit more. Or, if I'm mekarev and atzitz nakav, I take a potted planter and I bring it closer to the ground, so then that would be considered an offshoot, a tolda of the malacha of Zoreya. The Rama even discusses, if you assume mashke mayim lezraim is considered a tolda, a malacha d'araisa on Shabbos, so then what about eating outside? Shouldn't we be concerned that perhaps if you eat outside, if you have a picnic on Shabbos, you're going to spill something on the floor and that's going to help the grass grow a little bit better? And we discuss why perhaps nowadays that concern is no longer of so much relevance. We then discuss the difference between an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz she'enu nakuv, whether you have holes in the potted plant, whether it's a planter with holes in it or not. If it has holes in it, we consider it to be mechuber lekarka. If it does not have holes in it, we consider it to be talush. Now, what about when you have an atzitz nakuv hamunach al gabi yisedus? What if you have a potted planter that really should be considered mechuber lekarka, but it's on top of a stand? So should we assume that that's still considered to be mechuber lekarka or not? This is a machlokes Tosfos and the Rambam. The Rambam is of the opinion, no, once it's raised, once it's elevated from the ground, that is now considered talush. It's not considered connected to the ground at all. And therefore, he says that that would no longer have the status of anything that's mechuber lekarka with regard to Tumah Vitara, with regard to much of the other halachas that we described. Tosfos is of the opinion that even if it's munach agabi yesedus, it's still considered mechuber lekarka, and you would be chayiv midrabanan only. If a person takes a planter from the ground, puts it on top of a stand on Shabbos, you would only be chayiv midrabanan. Why? Because Tosfos is of the opinion that even when it's elevated, it's still considered mechuber lekarka. All you're doing is being memayit the yanika a little bit. You're lessening a little bit the amount of nutrients, of sustenance that it got from the ground, but it still is getting some sort of sustenance from the ground, even when it's elevated, even when it's raised on top of a stand. Which led us to the next discussion, which is the Gemara and Shabbos Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis. Hai parpisa, when you have an atzitz nakav, a potted planter, when you have tsror she'alu ba'asavim, when you have a rock on the ground that has little weeds growing out of it, and a person has to relieve themselves and they have no tissues, so they used to use rocks, so the Gemara says you're allowed to take that, even though you're temporarily raising it off the ground. So why are you allowed to do that? So the Gemara says, mishum kavod abrius we allowed. So according to Tosfos, it makes a lot of sense. Tosfos is of the opinion that while it was on the ground, it was connected to the ground, and that's considered mechuber. Even if I pick it up temporarily from the ground, it's still a little bit mechuber, and therefore, mishum kavod abrius, we always allow a person to violate a iser derabbanan. So Tosfos says that's the reason why the Gemara tells us that one would be allowed to do so on Shabbos. However, if you learn like the Rambam, that's considered talush. Once you raise something off from the ground, it's considered like it's already detached from the ground. Aren't you violating a melacha d'araisa by picking it up? So how would we allow a person to do that? Even if it's mishum kavod abrius, we don't allow you to violate a iser d'araisa. So the answer to that is the Rambam conveniently leaves that halacha out. Even though the Gemara spells it out clearly, the Rambam leaves it out, which makes a lot of sense because the Rambam is of the opinion once something is elevated, is detached from the ground, it's no longer considered mechuber lekarka at all. Then we spoke about the surprising discussion about an atzitz nakuv when you have a potted planter that is in somebody's house nowadays on top of the stone floor. So should you say that that's still considered a little bit mechuber lekarka? We mentioned that was a discussion between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Shevet HaLevi, versus Rav Asher Weiss and others who feel that that's just totally unreasonable to assume that it's gaining any nutrients, any sustenance from the ground. And finally, last week we discussed another issue about whether or not one would be allowed to open the shades and close the shades, open the door, open the window right next to the plant. Should we assume that you're helping along the process of growth and you're being mashkemayim lezarim? It's like pouring a little bit of water on the pre-existing plants that you already have outside. So too, if I open the windows, if I open the shades and now bring sunlight in, maybe that's considered also like a mashkemayim lezarim. That should be a tolda of zareya, or perhaps not. So now let's continue with the following discussion. And that is, finally, when we've gotten to the very end of Melechas Zareya, and we've discussed for a couple of weeks pretty much all the possibilities, and I think most of what there is to say about Zareya, of course, there's always more. Arucha Me'eretz Mida, the Torah is never-ending. However, I think it's important to discuss what exactly is Yisod Ha'ir of Zareya. Now, what do I mean? We've been discussing a lot about the application of Zareya, and whether this is considered Zareya, whether that's considered Zareya, and all of that is just details. But what about the fundamental underpinnings of the Melech of Zareya? And in order to have an understanding as to what exactly we're going to discuss tonight, we have to begin with the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us, I didn't put it on here, the Gemara says, let's say you have a person, back in the days of the Gemara, the way they used to bake bread was, they had an oven, and I think generally it was a round oven, they would stick pieces of dough to the side of the oven, and then it would get baked, and they would go and take a spatula later on, and take it off like that. That's the way they used to bake the bread. So the Gemara has a question like this. Let's say somebody on Shabbos goes and takes a nice big clump of dough, sticks it onto the oven in order to bake it on Shabbos, and now he realizes that he's going to violate the Melach of Ofa on Shabbos, of baking, of Bishul. So how are you allowed to do that? So what are you supposed to do now? So the Gemara is not sure, what are we talking about? Are we talking about that the person did it by mistake, and now they realize a few minutes later, oh yeah, I made a mistake, so before it gets baked, they want to take it down? Or are we talking about someone who did it b'mezid? Someone said, in defiance, I want to violate the Melacha of Shabbos, I want to go and be mevashel, I want to be ofa on Shabbos, and now the question is, should we advise them to do something once it's already been done? What do you mean? What can we advise them to do? What can we advise a person to do? Take it off. So what could be wrong with that? It's not a Melacha, it's an Issur D'Rabbanan. So correct, so it's an Issur D'Rabbanan. The Gemara says in Shabbos, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, to take a piece of dough that's on the side of the oven and remove it with the spatula on Shabbos or with your hands, that's called haroda es hapas b'Shabbos. That's called removing it from the oven on Shabbos, which is a isser derabbanan on Shabbos. So again, the question that the Gemara raises is, a person puts dough onto the oven on Shabbos. If we leave it there, you're going to violate the malacha d'araisa of ofe on Shabbos. If we advise you to take it down, then you're going to violate now a malacha midirabbanan. Not a malacha, but an issa derabbanan on Shabbos. So what should you do? What do you say? Says the Gemara, we allow you to violate a issa derabbanan on Shabbos in order to save yourself from a malacha derais. Okay? Makes a lot of sense? Chatei bishvil shetiska atzmacha. You should do a small aveira in order that you won't come to violate a bigger aveira. That's what the Gemara tells us. The lesser of the two evils is what a person should do. So that's what we're told in the Gemara. And as we said, the Gemara there first thinks that we're talking about somebody who made an honest mistake. He's b'shogeg. And he goes and mistakenly, he doesn't realize that it's Shabbos, he mistakenly puts the piece of bread onto the oven and then realizes later on, what did I do? So before it bakes, he wants to ask the Shiloh, what should I do now? So we tell him he should go and save himself from a mistake, the Araisa, and he should take it down. Then the Gemara says that can't be what we're talking about. Why? Because in order to be chayev a karban, chatas on Shabbos, a person has to have tchilasa v'sofa b'shogeg. So over here, if I put it in and I was b'shogeg, and then later on I realize that I made a mistake, so by the time it's finished the baking process, that's not going to be shogeg anymore. So I'm not going to be chayv carbon anyway. So the Gemara says that can't be what we're talking about. So the Gemara then changes the ukimta and says what we're describing is a case where a person did it b'mezid. You purposely went ahead and put it on. And what's your punishment if you purposely violate a malacha d'araisa on Shabbos? You're going to get skila. So the Gemara says, the guy comes running, he says, oh yeah, I just violated Malach of the Reis on Shabbos, what should I do? I'm going to get skila. So we tell him, you know what? In order to save yourself from skila, you should go and violate an Issur D'Rabbanan, take it down, and that's what the Gemara advises. Now, this is a very, very important Gemara that has nafkaminas not only for Shabbos, but for other things as well. And let's just digress for a minute because we should appreciate this Gemara. It's a very important one that's discussed at length with many, many other ramifications l'halacha. Let's say, for example, you have very often the Gemara says in that context that the only person who's allowed to do that, who's allowed to remove the pas on Shabbos, let's say I do the malacha, b'mezid. I go and I put a piece of dough onto the oven, b'mezid on Shabbos. I'm going to violate the malacha d'araisa. And I don't care, in defiance, I don't care, I want to violate the malacha. And you watch from the side, and you say, hey, Shechter, what are you doing? So I'm not interested in listening. I'm just going to leave it there because I don't care. Now, what about you? Do you have a right to come along and violate an Issa Derabanan in order to save me from an Issa Deraisa? What would he say?
No.
Why not? Why don't we look at the greater, what's going to come out for the greater world? In the world, either there's going to be a violation of Shabbos, b'mezid, a violation of Achiv Skila, if we keep things the way they are. Or if you jump in and get involved, there's going to be only a violation of an Issa Derabanan. The answer is, says the Gemara, no, it's not your business. It's my problem, I created the problem, it's my cheshbon with God that I have to work out. And if I have a way of saving myself by violating an Issa Derabanan, that's my business. But for you to get involved to step in, that you don't have a right to do. That's what the Gemara says clearly. Now, let's say for example, so that's where we learn the rule, Chate b'shvil shetiska chavercha. We never say that you should do an aveira in order that the other person should have a mitzvah. That's what we don't assume such a thing. We only assume Chate b'shvil shetiska atzmacha. You have a right to do a small aveira in order to make yourself gain, but not in order to make someone else gain. So that's, let's say you have, every so often you have a moel. So a moel has a lot of brisin to do, and we want him to do a brisin in a certain place, but he's not going to be able to daven tefillah b'tzibur because he has to travel from whatever city he's in, and by the time he gets there, gets back, there's no other minyan, whatever it is, so he's going to have to be mevatel tefillah b'tzibur. So the shaila is asked in the achronim, should he be mevatel tefillah b'tzibur in order to fulfill the mitzvah of bris milah? They don't have another moel to ask to do the bris milah for them. He's not able to get there in time for the minyan. So what should he do? So this is a very relevant discussion. Do we say, well, how big of an aveira is it not to down with a minyan? Not such a big aveira. How big of an aveira is it not to give a bris milah? That's a terrible aveira. So maybe he should forego the mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur in order to help the person fulfill the mitzvah of bris milah. So this is a very important discussion that certainly has a lot of relevance lahalacha in many, many different areas. Now let's say the Gemara says if it's lahatzelas kla Yisrael, then it's certainly mutter. The Gemara says in Nazir Daf Chav Gimel by the story of Ya'el, by Yael Eshos Chever Hakeni. So what happened? Even though she was an Eshos Ish, and generally we assume that Avelozer, Gilerais, and Shvichas Dam is not permissible, a person has to give up their life, yet the Gemara says that she was violating the Isser of Gilerais, and Ya'el Eshos Chever Hakeni went and was Mezane, even though she was an Eshos Ish, but she did it lahatzelas kla Yisrael. So when you're doing something that's lahatzalas kla Yisrael, it's not just to save yourself, then obviously the rules are going to be a little bit different. That's quoted in the Beis Shmuel lahalacha and Evan Ezer, Simen Kuf Ayin Ches. That if it's lahatzalas kla Yisrael, that would be a very different story. Now, interestingly enough, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, have a mechashiv hefsin mitzvah keneged tzchara. What does that mean? Very hard to translate those words. Have a mechashiv hefsin mitzvah keneged tzchara. What does it mean? You should figure out what's the loss of a mitzvah keneged tzchara that you're going to get. What exactly does that mean? So does it mean if I have a mitzvah triage and I want to figure out, should I do this or should I do that? So I should figure out how much schar am I going to get if I do this mitzvah, how much schar am I going to get if I do that mitzvah? What do you mean how much schar? You don't know what the system is. You don't know how much schar you're going to get for any given mitzvah that you perform. So what exactly does the Mishnah mean? So one of the Mefarshim says what it means is, have a mechashev hefsin mitzvah keneged schar means, in a case like we're describing, when a person has two options in front of them, and you have to figure out the lesser of the two evils. So you have to make a cheshbon, like in our case. I can either keep things the way they are and violate a malacha d'araisa on Shabbos of Bishul, or I can step in and do something else, which is only an Issa d'Rabbanan, and save myself from an Issa d'araisa. So that's having mechashiv, hefsin mitzvah, keneged schar. You have to sometimes weigh out the options and figure out, is it d'araisa, is it d'Rabbanan, is it a minig, is it something that's only a chumrah? And you have to put all that together and make the equation and figure out, how are we going to calculate what's worthwhile to violate and what's worthwhile not to violate? So that's a very interesting and important halacha that comes up, the halacha l'maisa. What you see clearly from our Gemara is, that's obvious, right? So I think so. Chate b'shvil shetiska atzabcha means if I'm going to come out gaining.
So within the hierarchy of skila, kares, mitzvah, shemayim, etc., you would do that every single part of that?
I don't know. I don't know for sure what the answer is. I don't know. I don't know what.
Two mitzvahs that say d'oraisa, it's much more difficult to adjust that.
Right. So if you have two mitzvahs, you don't know what the schar is. But if you have something which is a hierarchy, and one is going to be punishable with kares, one is only going to be punishable with malchus, I would say you should probably chate b'shvil shetiska atzmecha would obligate you to do something which is the lesser of the two evils, probably. So that's a very important thing. You know, my father always says over from Rav Shach, that Rav Shach at some point changed his political view about voting in Eretz Yisrael, whatever it was. I don't remember what. I think his opinion originally was we should have nothing to do with the government. Then later on he changed his mind, and he came out strongly that they should vote for a certain political party. I don't know exactly what the history was. But basically Rav Shach was campaigning. He was going around and trying to rally up support that people should vote for this party. So he said that it's a mitzvah. I'm sorry, no, I'm mixing up the story. That's a story about Rav Kook. But Rav Shach basically, somebody said to him, what do you mean? Shev al tasa adif. Why are we getting involved? If you don't know that the government is going to do everything al pi halacha, and you think that maybe you can save them a little bit and influence them a little bit by being involved in the government, shev al tasa adif. Don't you know we always say that just sit by idly and don't do anything, and that's the better, that's the lesser of the two evils. And Rav Shach said it's not true. Rav Shach said it's not the case. We don't always say that Sheva Altasa is the lesser of the two evils versus Kumva Ase. It's not always true. And he proved it from a Mishnah in Zvachim, that the Mishnah says when you have Matan Dalid, Shenis Arv Matan Achad, when you have one bowl of dam, we had shechted one carbon that needs four sprinklings on the Mizbeach. We shecht another carbon that only needs one sprinkle on the Mizbeach, and we're not sure which one is which. So what do you do now? You have a Kohen standing there with two bowls, and he's not sure. I'm sorry, they both get mixed together, and now he doesn't know. How much should he sprinkle on the Mizbeach? So the Gemara says, well, maybe this way is better, maybe that way is better, maybe this is including that, and that's not including this. That's what the Gemara has a machlokas, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shua, which one is better of the two evils? Ask Rav Shach, what do you mean? One is going to be Sheva Al Tasa, one is going to be Kum Vase. What's the discussion? Why don't you just put one sprinkle on the Mizbeach? This way you're certainly not violating anything more. You're certainly not doing more than you're supposed to. So Sheva Al Tasa Adav, said Rav Shach, you see that that's not the factor in the Gemara. You see the Gemara there is taking both sides of the equation equally. And you see that Sheva Al Tasa is not always the lesser of the two evils. So again, relating to your point, we don't always say that the hierarchy is going to be based on whether you're doing a Maisa or not. That's not always the answer. Perhaps the levels of punishment that you're going to get might be an indicator, but Sheva Al Tasa versus Kum Vase is not always the answer. Sometimes you have to take the lesser of the two evils, which even might include you performing a Maisa. What? Okay? So now let's continue. What? Yeah? Right. Yeah. So I think it's a silly shaila. I saw that. The reason I think it's silly is because it's just not relevant. If you're going to take ways and the patient is going to get to the hospital quicker, so of course you should use it. And if it's going to make you get back home quicker so that you could treat another patient, it's still irrelevant. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what the relevance of that. Someone just showed it to me. Did you show that to me? Someone just this week showed it to me. I don't know. I find he's very interesting. I find he's very interesting, but sometimes they're just not so relevant, the questions. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I find that he brings. I'm not knocking Reb Zilberstein at all. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and his svarim are amazing. And he's extremely prolific, and he writes tons of svarim. Rav Asher Weiss did tell me that there's no question in his mind that not one of those shilas ever actually happened. So I don't know. So that's just interesting. You know, he writes in there about how there was a gardener who was brought to get a snake out of a garden, and he did some magic, and it flew up to the sky, and it came into a bag, and whatever. I don't know. And he says that, I'm telling you it happened. Okay, maybe. Could be. You know, there's nothing wrong with shilas that never happened. Like the Chumash Hadeshin, who was one of the earliest we've shown him, Chumash Hadeshin is all made up shilas. He made them up and said that, you know, these are the answers. So, again, you have shilas and chubas where sometimes they make up shilas. Whatever, it's interesting. Nonetheless, he brings a lot of light to areas of Torah that we would never have noticed without him. So it's a very important work regardless. Let's get back to what we're saying here. So we have this Gemara about Roda Chalos on Shabbos, about Rediyas Hapas, taking it off of the oven. If I bemaze it, put it onto the oven on Shabbos, and now I want to save myself from violating an Issur D'Oraisa on Shabbos. So it says you're allowed to violate an Issur D'Rabbanan on Shabbos by taking it down Rediyas Hapas on Shabbos. Now, what you see clearly is that obviously you're not going to violate the malacha of Ofa on Shabbos until... What? No. Until it's finished. Until it's baked. Why? How do you see that? Because if you would be chayiv the first second, right away when I slap something onto the side of the oven, then what's the whole discussion in the Gemara? Once you violated the malacha is over. Obviously what you see is that it's a process, and you're not going to become chayiv until it gets to a certain phase of the baking process. But just by putting it on alone, that's not going to be enough to be mechayiv you in the malacha of Ofan Shabbos. That's number one. That's what you see, and that's an important axiom to know before we go further. Another thing. let's say we discussed a couple of weeks ago, is there an Isser of Chatzi Shir, let's say, by Hotzah on Shabbos or by Tchumen on Shabbos? Why am I allowed to take a step anywhere? Why don't you say, right away, I'm in a Chatzi Shir violation of Tchumen? Obviously not, because there's a threshold. By certain malachos, by certain Isurim on Shabbos, we assume, until you reach that threshold, there's nothing to talk about. It's not a malacha at all. Let's say, Kosev Osachas B'Shabbos. What are you going to say? The malacha of Ksiva is only if you write two letters. So you're going to say, a person writes one letter, he's a Chatzi Shir of malacha of Kosev? No. Because that's a threshold. Without that, it's not called a malacha. It's like you're just scribbling. That's nothing at all. So too over here, when it comes to Ofa, we assume the same thing. Let's say by Bishul, what if I'm cooking up water on the oven? So what would he say? The first minute that I turn it on before anything gets hot. Also the same thing. Obviously, I'm not in violation of any Isser, of any malacha at all. So if I put a kettle on the fire and then I realize, oh yeah, I made a mistake, and I take it off before it gets warm, obviously you're not going to be in violation of any malacha on Shabbos. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Shin Yud Ches, which is Hilchos Bishul, where the Shulchan Aruch spells this out so clearly. Zok to Shulchan Aruch, Mutter Liten Kiton Shamayim, Oshal Shar Mashkim Keneged Eish. I'm allowed to take a kettle of water. Obviously, I'm not allowed to put it on the fire because that's a Malach of Bishul. But to put it, let's say, next to the fire, where it will get a little bit warm, but not really, Lahafik Tzinasan, where I'm just going to remove the chill from the water. Let's say a baby bottle. So you don't want to serve the baby a cold bottle with cold water, but you're not allowed to heat up the water on Shabbos. So what are you going to do? You're going to put it a little bit removed, not directly close, touching to the flame. You're going to put it in a place where it will take out the chill from the water. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's mutter. Uvavav sheyitnem rachok mehaesh be'inyan she'einu yachal hischamim ba'osamakam at shetehei ayatzo ledesbo. Again, you have to leave it far enough away that it can never reach the threshold of yatzo ledes, which is your hand would get burned from the water. So obviously, that would be the malacha. Aval asur lekarvo al ha'esh lemakam sheyuchal hischamim shetehei yatzo ledesbo. Meaning, you'll say, why don't I put it right above the fire and I'll take it away before it gets too hot? Says the Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to do. Why? Because we're concerned that you're going to leave it there too long, and then you're going to violate the Isser. So, what you see clearly from the Shulchan Aruch is that there's nothing wrong at all with taking something and putting it next to the fire in a way that it's impossible for it to ever reach the Yatzo Ledes. Why? Why should that be permissible? Why don't you say it's a Chatzi Shir of Bishul? The answer is, because again, there's a threshold, the same way by baking. Until it's baked, you're not violating a Chatzi Shir of Afiyah. So too over here by Bishul. There's no Chatzi Shir of Bishul until it becomes hot enough that it's Yatzo Ledes Bo. If you do something which is only leading up to Yatzo Ledes Bo, that's not considered a Chatzi Shir, that's not a violation of Shabbos at all. With all that in mind, let's try and get a better understanding of the Malacha of Zoreya that we've been discussing for the last couple of weeks.
I'm sorry, why calling it over the flame isn't the same thing as putting the dough?
So that's like Gzeira Midrabbanan, because if you hold it over the flame, we're concerned maybe you're going to hold it over a second too long, and then you're going to violate a real Isser. However, if I put it, let's say, 5 feet away from...
I understand, but why is it the same as putting the dough, just said before, yeah, the dough against the fire, and you see that you don't have the Isser right away?
It is the same.
It is the same.
That's what I'm pointing out. By afiyah, by baking, the same way that, obviously, you see from the Gemara that you're not going to violate it the second you put it onto the wall of the oven. It's only once it gets baked. So to over here by Bishul, you're not going to be in violation of the Malach of Bishul until it actually gets cooked. If I just hold it over the flame for 2 minutes, that should be permissible. Answer is no. That's an Isser Dirabbanan, because maybe you're going to leave it on too long. I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear. Thank you. So now let's bring all of that and all the previous weeks into the Malach of Zoreya. Yeah?
But in the case of the dough, you're still over an Isser Dirabbanan, which is why you have to take it off before it actually cooks. I mean, it's the lesser of two evils, is taking it off before it actually cooks. So
right.
You're only over an Isser Dirabbanan. What Isser Dirabbanan are you over if you just put the bottle, let's say, near the flame?
Near the flame is fine. What if I hold it right over the flame, you mean?
Yeah, over the flame.
So that's a Gzeira Midrabbanan that maybe you're going to come to leave it too long. Right? It has the potential to really cook. Right? Correct. Thank you. So let's go like this. When you think about the Malacha of Zoreya, so the Achronim have a major discussion about, and this is such a fundamental understanding to the whole Malacha of Zoreya, and that's why I think just to wrap up everything we're saying, it will become much clearer now that we have all this background the last few weeks. So when we talk about the Malacha of Zoreya, what exactly is the Malacha? Is the Malacha the actual Maisa Hazriya, putting the seed into the ground and making it grow? Or is it the Chalos HaHashrasha? Is it when the seed actually takes root? Now this is a major machlokas between the Rashash and the Minchas Chinuch, and it's a very, very important machlokas, which deals a lot with Bishul and Afia and trying to compare the two malachas and figure out are they similar or not. So let's go like this. I'm first going to speak out the Rashash's position, and then we'll learn through it together inside. And then we'll go through a Minchas Chinuch. The reason I put so much Minchas Chinuch on here, and that's what I want to focus on for the remainder of the time after we learn this Rashash, is because the Minchas Chinuch is just amazing. Minchas Chinuch is just amazing. And the Minchas Chinuch, okay, we'll get to that in a few minutes. So number one, the Rashash. Also, the Rashash is also amazing. What's amazing about him is the Rashash was not a rabbi. The Rashash was a balabas. He was a banker, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rashash took his time to write his Ha'aras on Shas. I think he wrote on almost every Masechta. So you'll think, well, this was his life's work, so what's the big deal, right? You can have a balabas who's a banker who can sit and learn Shas his whole life and write comments, and then at the end of his life he prints a sefer. What's special about this is that really the story goes that the Rashash was not working on this his whole life. The Rashash, the person who went to print the Vilna Shas, passed through the Rashash's town, which was Strasson, Reb Shmuel Strasson was his name, I forgot where he lived. And basically, on their way to print the Vilna Shas, they passed through his town and they asked him to look through it for any mistakes. And as he was going, he wrote comments along the way. So this was not a work of his entire life. This was just along the way, this is what he came up with. So it shows you a little bit of the magnitude of what kind of person we're dealing with. So the Rashash argues that Malacha Zoreya is defined by the Hashrasha that takes place after you plant the seed. It's not by planting the seed alone, it's by the Hashrasha that takes place. And therefore the Rashash argues, let's say a person goes on Shabbos, puts a seed in the ground, and later on takes it out, before it takes root. So the Rashash would argue that you have now undone everything that you violated on Shabbos. Okay? Midah everything. Right? You wouldn't be in violation of anything. If, again, you plant a seed in the ground, which should be the violation of Malacha Zoreya, says the Rashash, no, if you go later on before it takes root and you take it out of the ground, you remove it from the ground, we would assume that that's not a malacha at all and you would be able to take yourself away from the violation of Chiyuv Skila, which is very similar to anyone who hasn't figured it out. It's very similar to the Gemara that we just discussed by Afiyan Shabbos. I started off doing a malacha, I did the act, and now I somehow figure out how to undo it, so now I've gotten myself out of the Chiyuv Skila, out of the Yisr Karis. Okay. He brings a raya to his halacha from that Gemara in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, where the Gemara tells us by Afia the same thing. You have a way of undoing the malacha that you did. Now, the question is, I asked the Rashash, the Hashrasha will never take place on Shabbos itself. It takes a couple of days in order for it to take root. So what am I talking about, asked the Rashash? How can you say that you're only going to violate the malacha once it takes root? It's not true. Can't take root right away on Shabbos. Says the Rashash, what you see is that even though Nigmara la'achara Shabbos, even though the Hashrasha only takes place after Shabbos is over, still, if at the time that I do the Hashrasha, my intention is that it should stay in the ground until it grows roots and until it takes root into the ground firmly, then I am violating the Malacha already now, even though the Malacha itself is not really going to happen on Shabbos proper. Okay? Which is very surprising. That's the assumption of the Rashash. Now, he has the whopper of the Chiddush. Says the Rashash, the same way I assume that if you put something in the ground and you yank it out of the ground, you uproot it. Now you're going to be able to undo everything that you did. Says the Rashash, what if a person, however he says, what if you leave it in and all the Hashrasha takes place after Shabbos, you're going to violate the Malach of Zoreya? Now take the flip case. What if a person, 2 minutes before Shabbos is over, takes a soup and puts it up on the fire? Where there's obviously not enough time in 2 minutes for it to become so hot.
Why isn't that hot?
You don't need it for Matzah Shabbos. You're not doing it for any purpose. You don't need it. You just go, you put a hot soup, whatever, you do something. You heat something up on the fire 2 minutes before Shabbos is over, and you don't even have a chance before Shabbos is over to actually finish up the malacha. Says the Rashash, you're going to violate the malacha of Bishul even though the entire heating process happened after Shabbos was over. And even though at the time that you turned it on, it was impossible for it to take place on Shabbos. Why, says the Rashash? Because the same way by Zoreya. You can start a malach on Shabbos. All the activity can take place after Shabbos is over. Says the Rashash, that doesn't mean you're not in violation of malach on Shabbos. The same would be by putting something on the flame 2 minutes before Shabbos is over. It's not able to cook. Still, says the Rashash, even though everything takes place after Shabbos is over, you are still going to be in violation of a malach on Shabbos proper. That's the Chiddush of the Rashash. Now let's read it inside, learn it together. The Rashash is in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. Av kol zman shelo nishrash, keman deshadi bekado dami. The Rashash is quoting Gemara Menachos Daf Samach Tes, that as long as you have a seed in the ground that has not yet taken root, it's as if keman de madach bekado dami. It's as if you put it in a jar. That's not considered in the ground. Nothing happened yet. Mikal makom, still says the Rashash, kiven da yideis ri also ata yisharish achar kach. Since now I'm doing the activity, and because of the activity that I'm doing now, it's later on going to take root, which is the natural outgrowth of what I'm doing. Chayiv kamo ofev etzola. You're going to be chayiv for that activity the same way you would be chayiv for ofe and for tzola, for cooking and for baking. The chayiv afal pi denefa v'nitzla achar kach me'elav. What happens by afiyah? You stick something into the oven, right away at the time that I do the activity, nothing happens. It takes a couple of minutes for it to start cooking up and getting better until you have the final finished product. So too he says over here, vihine, and therefore, imlakar hazera kodim shenishrash, therefore says the Rashash, my chiddush is, if you now subsequently go and take the seed out of the ground that you originally put in, nira depatir l'mafreya masha zara, you are now going to be able to undo the mistake that you made. Kiven delo niskayma machshavto, because originally you put it in the ground and your plan was that it's going to take root and then you'll be chayif. However, if you go later on and you take it out of the ground, that will be able to undo everything that you've done. And this is something you can learn, as we said, from the Gemara in the beginning of Masechah Shabbos, by the person who takes the challah off of the oven on Shabbos. He goes on, then you say, vihine, the last line. Bizareya mashma dechayiv, after hashrasha lotia el b'chol. Umizen yirali, and from this you see, dechein ha'ofe b'shabbos imchashecha. What if you have somebody who bakes or cooks on Shabbos 2 minutes before Shabbos is over? Chayiv after ein sho shetigamer afiyasa mibaod yom. So that's the chiddush of the Rashash. The Rashash is of the opinion that what? That as long as you're machshava right now, number one assumption that he makes is, zoreya, when are you going to be chayiv? Only once it takes root. Aye, the taking root never takes place on Shabbos proper. It takes a couple of days for it to take root. Still, since at the time on Shabbos that I planted it into the ground, my machshava was that it should stay in the ground until it takes root. Therefore, he says, when that actually happens later on, it goes back retroactively, I'm going to be chayiv for a malacha that was violated on Shabbos. And therefore, that follows that if I take it out of the ground, I will save myself from violating the Yisr. And therefore, it also follows that if a person, says the Rashash, if a person will bake or cook something 2 minutes before Shabbos is over, he will be in violation of...
What happens if he takes it off the fire right Shabbos before?
So that's the same, says the Rashash. It'll be the same thing.
Okay.
That'll be the same, right.
So if someone planted something by accident in front of Rashash, he shouldn't remove it?
He should remove it.
Why? He has no intent of...
you're saying, lokai machshavto? So you need a malachas machshavos, but you're still going to violate a malacha b'shok? Right? Yeah.
So how does the Rashash explain... Shabbos, a person who conveys it puts a piece of dough on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So if he leaves it there, he's over an Isser dough, right? So if he takes any of the option to take
right.
It off. According to Rashash, either way, he started mazid, he's going to be over an Isser dough, right?
Well, not if it doesn't happen. If he takes it off before anything happens, then the premise to all of this is that you're only in violation of malacha of afiyah once it gets baked, not the second you put it on. Right? That's why we started with the way we started. Now, you look at a Chazanish, you look at it later, we don't have so much time, but the Chazanish basically says that this is not the only place we find it. We find it by other melachas as well, where you do an activity now, even though the hischaibus is only going to come later, but still, we retroactively put it back to the activity, the pu'ula that you did originally. Okay. Now, here comes the Menchas Chinuch. Now, I love the Menchas Chinuch, because he made such a tremendous contribution to the world of learning. Menchas Chinuch lived in the early 1800s, and the Menchas Chinuch was such a fascinating personality. I think my father says over that Rav Soloveitchik, before his bar mitzvah, read almost all the Menchas Chinuch. He said he used to sit in his bed after his mother told him he had to go to sleep, and he would keep the lights on under his covers and read the Menchas Chinuch. Not something I was doing before I was 13, but that's something that Rav Soloveitchik was doing. So there is an interesting discussion whether or not the Menchas Chinuch was a chassid or a misnagid. Now you'll say, Menchas Chinuch, really? He seems like the biggest misnagid in the world. Which chassid could write a sefer like that? It's just not the style of chassidim to write svarim like that. So I don't mean that they can't, just they don't. It's not the style. So it's interesting that it's really not clear whether he's a chassid or a misnagid, because really he was a clear misnagid. He happened to have married, he was a brother-in-law with the Divrei Chaim, the sons of Rav, so he had a little bit of ties over there. But still, he kept his distance, and even though he learned b'chavrusa with the Divrei Chaim, he didn't get involved in the chassidus at all. He was very, very much opposed to the chassidus. However, the story that's told is that the Minchas Chinuch, at one point in his life, unfortunately, his wife suffered a lot of miscarriages in a row, and the children kept being born as stillborns. And his wife was begging him that he should go for a bracha to Rav Meir Primishlan, who was one of the biggest Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, who lived in the next town over. He lived in Tarnopol, and Rav Meir Primishlan, I assume, was in Primishlan. So his wife was begging him that they should go for a bracha to the tzaddik who lives in the next town over. And the Minchas Chinuch was adamant, absolutely not. What's the tzaddik going to do for me? This Chassidish Rebbe, I'm not interested. And he was adamant that he had no interest. So finally, he decided he has to do something to calm his wife down. So he decided he's going to write a kvittel, and he's going to send it with an anonymous shliach to Rav Meir Primishlan. But the deal was, you're not allowed to tell him who sent it, because lest he finds out that the Rav, the Misnagdish Rav in the next town, is sending a kvittel to the Rebbe. So that's what happens. So he sends it to the Rebbe. And Rav Meir Primishlan, what they say is, he said the following. He said to the shliach, Mihu zeh ve'ezehu bala piska halazu eineni yodea. I don't know who this person is that sent this note to me about his tzaras in his life. Baram, one thing I could tell you is, Emasai ra'isi kvar enayim. I have never experienced anybody's eyes. Shmuros v'tahora shaka'elu. I have never come across anyone in my life who had eyes as pure as this anonymous person who sent me this kvittel. Asher lo ra'u miyemehem dvar tameh. That they never in their lives looked at anything that was impure. Okay, and that's part one of the story, that Rav Meir Primishlan had the highest regard for the Minchas Chinuch and said, just from looking at the note that he wrote, that it must be that this person has the purest eyes that I've ever met in my life. And then, nothing happened, the bracha didn't work, so Rav Meir Primishlan, so the wife of the Minchas Chinuch was begging him that they should go to the tzaddik themselves and talk out the issue. So finally he realized he doesn't have a choice, what's he going to do? So he buckled. So he goes to the Rav Meir Primishlan and he discusses the issue with him, and before he said anything, Rav Meir Primishlan said to his gabbai, whose name was Aryeh, he said, Aryeh, Madua eino omer birchas hamapil v'techdal hi milahapil. Maybe if this person would start saying hamapil at night, his wife would stop having a hapala, would stop having a miscarriage. Now, what was the story? The story was that the Minchas Chinuch used to fall asleep at the table every night learning, so he never had a chance to say Kriya Shema Lamita. And the Minchas Chinuch was so overwhelmed by the Ruach HaKodesh of Rav Meir Primishlan that the minute he walked into the room, he said, without the Minchas Chinuch uttering a word and saying his problem, right away he said, if only this person would say Hamapil at night, his wife would stop having miscarriages. And he was so overtaken by that Ruach HaKodesh, by that Nais, so he immediately became enthralled with the Hasidim. And we're told that after that, he used to hang out with Rav Naftali Rupshitzer, and then he used to go to the Belzer Tishin. He gives a big description about whatever. He changed later on in life, so you never know what can happen. It's very interesting. In fact, Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzin, the Sholem Eshiv, was a contemporary of the Minchas Chinuch, and Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzin, after the Minchas Chinuch passed away, they didn't want to tell him because he was a very old, sick man, and they didn't want to make his condition any worse by telling him that one of the Gedolei Hador had passed away. Finally, he found out about it. Never worked, so finally he found out about it, and he got up and he gave a big hesped, and he said, one thing I can tell all the people who are here is, miyom amdu al daito lo histakel chutz la'arba amas shalom. He never looked outside of his dalet amas. He always stuck to himself. He was an ish tzanua, and he says, achinu liros es kedushas hashchina al panav shahaisa. We were able to see the shchina that emanated from his face every time we looked at him. So he was a real tzaddik, a real kaddish v'tar, to the point that Rab Arela Belzer, one of the Belzer Rebbes, who obviously had a close connection with the Minchas Chinuch, because the Minchas Chinuch later on in life took a close liking to the Belzer Chassidim. So one time a Belzer Chassid came to Rabbi Arela Belzer and said to him, he's having a problem with Hirhurim Raim, that he can never focus and he's always thinking about things he shouldn't be thinking about. So he asked the Rebbe for an etzah of what he should do. And the Rebbe told him, Tzivelo Shayilmad B'Sefer HaKadosh Minchas Chinuch. He told him, if you learn through the Minchas Chinuch, Halimud Bo Hiskula the Taharas HaMachshava. Because the Minchas Chinuch was such an Ish Kadosh and an Ish Emes, and such a person who was so careful about everything that he did, so therefore, he said, it's a skula for a person to have Taharas HaMachshava if you learn through the Minchas Chinuch. This is all a good enough reason to learn the Minchas Chinuch, but not only that, I think another reason is because we should all feel really bad for the Minchas Chinuch, and that is because the Minchas Chinuch throughout his life is writing Chidushim on Shas and Shulchan Aruch, and he had Chidushim on everything. And as a side gig, he decided to write on the Sefer HaChinuch also. And everything was stolen. The story goes that everything was stolen from him. All of his chidushim that he worked on his whole life, on Shas and Shulchan Aruch, was all stolen and never given back. And finally, his Talmidim said to him, if the only thing that's left is, you know, this little kuntres that you wrote on the Sefer HaChinuch, maybe you should print it before that's stolen also. So he didn't want to. He was a beganav, and finally he decided he's going to listen to them, and he printed it be'ilum shem. He didn't write his name, and nobody knew who it was. And he had no indication in there of, there was no indication at all of who he was. Finally, in the later editions, they wrote, and he wrote, he added it in, who he was, because they said it would do better for sales if people found out that he was the one who wrote it. So we should feel a little bit bad that somebody worked his whole life on writing chidushim on every page in Shas and everything. Can you imagine what the world would be if he had a menchas chinuch on everything? So all he's left with is Nebuch the menchas chinuch, which is a pretty amazing work on its own. But it behooves us to learn the menchas chinuch. Oh, now that we only have 2 minutes, we don't even have a chance. But is it okay for everyone if we go maybe a few minutes over time? Yeah? So it's a very important menchas chinuch. With that background in mind, we should take the menchas chinuch very seriously. So let's see. The menchas chinuch argues very strongly with all of the premises that the Rashash made. Every single one of them. Every single one of the ideas that the Rashash puts forth here, the menchas chinuch disagrees with. Let's see. Hine yadua, decha malacha Shabbos, eino chayav ala malacha reach b'nigmer hamalacha. The only time you're going to violate a malacha on Shabbos is when you come to the completion of the malacha, kigon ofe. For example, I put a piece of dough onto the oven, and now I realize I made a mistake. If I take it off before it's cooked, before it's baked, obviously I'm not going to be in violation. Let's say I stick something onto the oven and it doesn't get baked. I'm not going to be in violation at all. And later on I take it down. Either I or somebody else below nefe. I'm not going to be in violation of the malacha. Now, let's just, in the interest of time, let's skip a little bit. Va'al ha-malacha. Where are we? What? Halfway down, Va'al ha-malacha, everyone has it? Va'al ha-malacha below asiya eino chayiv. Don't forget, don't make a mistake. If a malacha is performed without any maisa that happens, without any performance, mutar la'hadbik taner im chashecha, let's say Friday afternoon I put some dough into the oven, even though all of the baking process takes place on Shabbos, so if I do that before Shabbos, obviously I'm not going to be in violation, even though it bakes on Shabbos proper. So he sets out the rules for us. Number one, if I do an activity on Shabbos and the activity is not completed on Shabbos proper, then there is no malacha. If I do an activity on Friday and everything happens on Shabbos itself, so I did no activity on Shabbos proper, also there's no malacha. Okay? Even though everything happened on Shabbos itself, but since I wasn't actively involved, I didn't do anything, so therefore, I would not be in violation. Skip down one line. I don't know about you, but where I went to school, we didn't know this in grade school. He says over here, every kindergarten kid knows that these are the rules of Malach on Shabbos. Now, the same works the other way. Here he's coming to argue on premise number one of the Rashash. Let's say I put a piece of dough into the oven on Shabbos afternoon, very close to Shkia, and nothing bakes until Shabbos is over. Of course you're going to be potter. Why? Because nothing happened on Shabbos itself. Okay? So the Menchas Chinuch right away is doing away with the assumption of the Rashash. The same way the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, if I put something in the oven on Shabbos itself and I take it out before it's baked, I'm not going to be in violation of anything. So too he says over here, if I put it in the oven 2 minutes before Shabbos and Shabbos comes and breaks up my melacha, so if everything happens after Shabbos, there's nothing to worry about. And therefore he ends off and he says, Haklal, what is the bottom line? What's the rule? The only time I'm going to be in violation of a malacha is if both the activity and the outcome happen both on Shabbos. Avol be'echad mehem, if only one, either the activity or the outcome happens on Shabbos, meaning either I put it in the oven 2 minutes before Shabbos is over, or I put it in the oven 2 minutes before Shabbos starts. So you don't have both the activity and the outcome on Shabbos proper. Says the Menchas Chinuch, you are going to be pater, you're not going to be chayv on Shabbos. So number one, that's obviously not like the Rashash. Ask the Menchas Chinuch. We know that one of the Lamates Shabbos Malachos is the Malach of Zoreya. And we know that Zoreya is only when it takes root in the ground. That's what he proves from Kalei HaKerem. What's the halach of Kalei HaKerem quickly? So the original halacha is you're not allowed to plant kilayim. Kilayim means, the Gemara says, b'mapolis yad, when I take all three of the, I forgot what the three minim are, but I throw them in one shoot. What? What? Not Zohar, not on Shabbos. Kilayah Karen. If I take... Right, so if I take three different things of b'mapolis yad, I throw them out into the field in one shot, that's considered kilayah Karen. Now, what if I already have grapes growing here and now I choose to go and plant something else next to it? So I didn't plant them at the same time, so I'm not planting kilayah Akarim. Says the Gemara, no, you're going to be in violation not when you plant it, but only once it takes root in the ground. Well, says the Menchas Chinuch, if that's the definition of Zorea by kilayah Akarim, maybe we should transfer that over to Hilchos Shabbos and say that's the only definition of Zorea by Shabbos as well. Right? Only the Hashrasha. And if that's true, then we have your question. How can you ever be in violation of Zorea on Shabbos? So you look a little bit further, skip down a paragraph. Ach ze eno. You'll read it on your own. But basically he built up the case and then he says it's impossible to say that. De'im nomar, if you're going to translate the halacha of Kloya Kerem and Kola Terakula of Zorea and say that that's the definition of Zorea on Shabbos as well, im nomar te'ika azriya hainu b'hashrasha, and you're going to say on Shabbos also you only violate the malach of Zorea when it takes root in the ground, like the Rashash actually posited. Like the, he's like taking him point for point here. He doesn't quote, but he's taking him point for point. He's arguing everything. Im kain, im zara b'shabbos v'nishra shachakach b'chol. Exactly your question, Avi. Lo yiachayiv k'mo ofel le'el. That should be the same. That should be synonymous to afia. And what do the Minchas Chinuch say by afia? If you bake a minute before Shabbos is over and all of the baking process happens after Shabbos, you're going to be putter because you didn't do the maisa and the outcome both on Shabbos. Imkena ma'imavur b'mishnah. Why do we say that one of the lametes avos melachos is azareya is going to be chayiv? V'chayim b'gemara. The Gemara tells us hanoteh v'hamavrich v'hamarkiv harei kaimelam b'rosh hashanah v'psachim. Don't we know the halacha is that there's a machlokas? Chad amar delakita tzarech lamed yom. The question is how long does it take for something to actually take root in the ground? Either it takes 30 days or yud dalad yom, 14 days or 3 days. V'anan paskidon, and we hold like the middle shita that it takes 14 days for something to take root into the ground once it's planted. Imkain, hey chay mishum zareya. How can you ever be chay? How can you ever violate the malacha, says the Minchas Chinuch, if the outcome doesn't come? What?
Yeah.
Okay, but still, you don't say that it's one continuous Shabbos. Right? Tibimanav shachem, zara b'chol. If you planted it during the weekday, uzman akliti yeh b'Shabbos. Let's say I planted it 14 days before, I mean, not 14 days before Shabbos, because that would be a Shabbos. So whatever, if you plant a b'chol and it starts taking root on Shabbos, v'ade pater alibi de kuliyama, because the malacha happened during the week. Just like if I put a pot of soup on the fire before Shabbos starts, and everything cooks on Shabbos, I'm not in violation of malacha d'araisa. Asher malacha nasas b'Shabbos, k'moshe kasab n'liyel. U'bavade mari b'zara b'Shabbos. Obviously, we're talking about a case where the person puts it into the ground on Shabbos. Okay, and if that's true, hey chayiv, how are you ever going to be chayiv? Right? Yishmak amin chas. So, ha'eno niklar azriya aliba dekuli ama pachas mekimel yom. The minimum shear in the Gemara for anything taking root is 3 days. So even 3 days, how can that happen on Shabbos? So go to the next paragraph. Al-Karchach Tzorach Lomar, obviously you have to say, says the Minchas Chinuch, the Yesh Chiluk. You have to say that there's some sort of distinction between Mevashel and Zoraya. Now you have to figure out what exactly is the distinction. Like Rav Asher Weiss once told me. Is it a Chiluk She'ena Mechalik? You know, you have to make a differentiation that actually makes a difference. You can't just make up distinctions that don't make any difference. So over here, you have to figure out what exactly is the difference, and here you're going to have to split hairs. Al-Karchach Tzorach Lomar, Diyesh Chiluk, says the Minchas Chinuch. Bishleima Mevashel or Ofeh, says the Minchas Chinuch. When you're talking about the Malacha of Mevashel or Ofeh, cooking or baking, Gemar Ahafiyah o Habishel, Nikra B'Shem Afiyah o Bishel. So here the Minchas Chinuch is getting dicey a little. He says, well, that's still called afia and bishel, because it's still cooking and it's still baking, and until it's finished, the baking is still called baking. What? It's not baked till it's baked. Avol kodem shenefer l'nikar b'shem afia klal. If I just put it in for 2 minutes. What? 1 second. Af dinas on the tocha tanur, even though I put it in the oven, if it's not baked, it's not baked. It's not baked till it's done. Avol lashon zriya. When I talk about the lashon of zriya, chal tekev kishemenafit azera agabi akarka. That's already called planting. If someone sees you stand over the ground with a seed, they're going to say, oh, you just planted something in the ground, even though they know that it didn't take root yet. So he says, therefore, you have to say that the nature of zoreya is categorically different than the nature of afiyah and bishul. Im kein lefizeh, im lakad min ha'aretz, tekev achar azriya, argue the last point of the Rashash. What if I go ahead and I plant something on Shabbos and now I want to, I realize, what did I do that for? And I want to rip it out of the ground. Bevarei chayiv. You're going to be in violation right away when you put it into the ground. It's not like afiyah. So he basically argues every single point with the Rosh Hashanah and he shows how it's just not the case. Afiyah and Bishol are not the same. Again, the Rosh Hashanah's whole premise was, let's bring a proof from afiyah, translate that over to Zoraya and say, well, they should be the same. Says the Menachas Chinuch, who told you? That's not true. They're not the same. And he gives a svara why he thinks they're different. Because afiyah, you would never call something baked until it's done. So if it's not done, it's not baked. Over here, we would call it Zoraya even before it takes root into the ground. That's what colloquially we would call it. So anyway, that's a very, very important machlokes the Rosh Hashanah and the Menachas Chinuch in understanding what exactly is the Melach of Zoraya. Now that we've been talking about it, what are we talking about? What do you have to do in order to violate the Melacha? So Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, just to close with this, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank has a problem with this. He says, well, you know, the Pasuk never says Zoraya or Bishol or Afia or Choresh or Ma'amir. What does the Torah say? Melacha lo sasu. Lo sasu ka Melacha. So it just says one big category of Melacha. So what do you mean? The Menachas Chinuch says, well, I would call it Zoraya, I wouldn't call it Bishol, I would call it Afia. What do you mean? I don't care what you would call it. The Torah says Melacha, so Melacha is Melacha. So that's a good question the Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank asks. So Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes from the Halachas Ketanos, just to sharpen it a little, and with this we'll close. I'm sorry we're a few minutes over time, but with this we'll close. I think it just sharpens the idea a little bit. He says, he quotes Halachas Ketanos, I didn't put it on here, and he says, Maishnat b'mevashav ha'ofa b'inon kishir b'shabbos, v'hazoreya mishehishlicha magabi karka mechayiv. We have another distinction between Zoraya and Ofe. Why is it by Bishul that we assume you have to make it to a certain threshold? And by Zoraya we assume Afila Zoraya Bekolshu. Once you put it into the ground, you're ready in violation. Why is that true? Tshuva, he says, Mistavra, Dibi Mevashova Ofe. This is an interesting svara. Dibi Mevashova Ofe Adayin Gemru Bide Adam, Shetzarach Lahagis Bekadera Velitchos Begechalim. When you throw something into the oven, your job is not done. You still have to make sure to stoke the coals. You still have to make sure to stir the pot. You still have to, you have things to do. You're not done yet.
Don't you have to water the seed if it's a completely dry land?
Avol Zoraya HaKol B'dei Shamayim. He says, by the activity of Zoraya, yes, there are things you can do. In the end of the day, the whole growing of the plant is going to be B'dei Shamayim. So that's also,
you're in a desert and you put a seed down, you could grow it.
Right, so again, so all I'm pointing out is, I think the Halachas Ketanos is hard to hear. I think the Menachas Chinuch is a little hard to hear also. And I think the question that the Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank asked on the Menachas Chinuch is a very compelling one. You're going to say, this is called Zoraya and that's called Afia. What do you mean? The Torah never said either of them. So you're describing, colloquially, what we would call Zoraya, what we would call Afia. But that's not what the Torah called Zoraya and Afia. The Torah just said, Lo Sasa Kol Melacha. So anyway, I know I'm leaving off with a little bit of a question mark, but I think the discussion is a very rich one between the Rosh Hashanah and the Menachas Chinuch. How do you fundamentally understand what it means when we say there's a Malach of Zoraya on Shabbos? Does it mean the Maisa Hashrasha, or does it mean just the planting alone? And the Nafkaminas will be obvious. Again, we said the various Nafkaminas that play out not only over here, but also by the Malach of Afi on Shabbos. I'm here to show next week.